Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Hello there.
And Josh Brown.
Hello there.
Now, this podcast comes but once a year, where we ask the entire, as many staff members as possible on the gaming channel to submit their rankings for Game of the Year. And it's a weighted ranking. So whatever you put at number one gets 10 points all the way down to number 10 with 1 point. And then we just collate everything to see what our actual Game of the Year is based on the community, or at least the community that resides within the one channel that we have. And so only I know this ranking because I'm the one who's put everything together. You guys sent me your rankings. Yes. And so we're going to initially do some honorable mentions, games that only one of us across the whole pool voted for. That pool, like I said, being presenters, being editors, whoever wanted to throw their stuff in. So all of our honorable mentions are Kentucky Route Zero, which was at Josh Brown's number two spot. But that's only an honorable mention. Only you, Josh Brown.
I think I was Kentucky the only person Rootin. To play that one, to be fair.
So I wish I stayed awake for it, mate. I tried it. I was at the start. I couldn't do it.
It's on my list to get to, but yeah.
Yes, it might be, I was going to say it might be a Christmas game, but I don't know if it's that positive.
Yeah, you know? It'll work.
But yeah, there's plenty of honorable mentions. So, Kentucky Route Zero, Call of Duty Warzone, again, Josh Brown being robbed. Devil May Cry 5 Special Edition, that was from James Pitt. Yakuza Like a Dragon, Bugsnacks, Fall Guys, Neo 2, Assassin's Creed, Valhalla, Astro's Playroom, Watch Dogs Legion, Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War, Gears Tactics, and Hades. All honorable mentions, only played by a select few, not enough to make the top 10 once we started crunching the points. Thoughts, fellas?
Have we already got it wrong? What's going on here? What's happening? Why are all those honorable mentions, man?
I'll tell you what, if you're on the PS5 or Epic's Game Store, you play Bugsnax for that ending and you're just like, what's going on?
Bugsnax is great, but apparently not that great. Apparently just great enough to be on. It was only on your list, Ben, right?
Wasn't my number nine. My number nine.
Your number nine?
Admittedly, Bugsnax is one that I started, right? But then I had to stop it because it's what me and my girlfriend are going to play over Christmas when I'm off. Like, we've decided that's going to be the Christmas game. So I didn't manage to get it done before this list. Look, this list, I'm already shaking because I'm not wearing a Christmas jumper for the first time in like 2 or 3 years for how many times we've done this.
I'm going to show
it all feels wrong. It's like we're in a parallel universe. That is lovely, that. That
Thank
is
you.
Brilliant.
Carry on.
That's all. I'm just Fair outraged. Enough. That's all I'm... Hades, especially. I thought that would be... Absolutely in.
I look forward.
At the same time, we kept forgetting that we even played Hades. I hate the way that game just becomes like a grind at the very end to do the same thing 10 times in a row for the final ending.
I look forward to my Christmas break now because Josh says it's him and his girlfriend that are going to play Bugsnax. But I'm also going to message him now every day.
Have you seen it yet? Have you done it yet?
Ben Roy, I'll just Skype you in. I'll just get a place on the chair and I'll just put your heed there and you can just talk us through everything that's going on.
It's right. You'll meet my granddad. I'll put him on the call as well.
Oh, nice. Get your granddad on Bugsnax. Okay, let's do this thing. So number 10 at the weighted ranking, number 10 is Spider-Man Miles Morales, which a hell of a game. I kind of thought this would be a lot higher. I think if it was longer and more fleshed out, it would be. I had a hell of a time with it. I think it flies by. The campaign's brilliant, although I did fall off in the last act. I think that it's a bit rushed in the final third. But for the most part, it's very powerful. And, you know, it is a nice showcase of the PS5. I think that was mostly the same for you, Mr. JB.
Yeah, interesting, because I didn't actually put that in my top 10 list that I sent you, so I'm surprised to see that there, because, yeah, while I really enjoyed that game, I thought it was, like, really solid, really great, I had a really fun time with it, It didn't quite do anything special enough to get into the top 10, because I must say, it's been an incredible year for games overall, IMO, yeah. And it was really difficult this time, more than any other time, putting together this top 10 list, and that would have just missed off. But it is, to be fair, I do think it is incredible, worth playing absolutely if you've got a PlayStation 5, and even if you've got a PlayStation 4, mm-hmm. and when it hits, that thing does hit.
Benroy, you should break your no Spider-Man rule and play Miles Morales.
I am not a Spider-Man man per se.
You should
but
be.
The January time's coming up. Hopefully, this new generation some slow time for games. I've only really got Hitman 3 and Resident Evil 8 pinned for next year so far, and Horizon and God of War. But I'm thinking about it, you know, just, you know, slide it in there, get it on PS4, you know, just mm-hmm. do it, play on PS5, but not yet. And then Miles will come afterwards eventually, but not yet.
Okay, fair enough. Number 9 is Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2, which I've actually ended up putting, I think, at like number 6 or something on mine. Because although that game is super, super short, like if you have the muscle memory for the original Tony Hawk's games, like that was, I did like pretty much 100% completion in like a weekend. Like, and even then it was only like 6 to 8-ish hours. I don't know if you feel the same, Josh, but like for me, it was like, it was immaculate and it was such a good rush and I had such a brilliant time with the soundtrack and everything else, but I did burn through it pretty quickly.
Well, it's funny, like, I remember the last time we talked about this, I kind of argued for its longevity, because while you are 100%, like, you can 100% it in, like, 6 hours, there's so much more to it outside of that. Like, you have an endless amount of challenges in that game, which some of them are grating, but some of them are genuinely worth pursuing, you know, trying to get a certain amount of tricks, hit a certain score, do levels in interesting ways that it added to the content of the game overall. And I just think it's a great game to jump in for 20 minutes a day. If you're feeling stressed, if you're having kind of like a bad time, you just want something that is mechanically perfect, mm-hmm. has this kick-ass soundtrack, has this awesome presentation, and just plays so well. Like, it's sadly not downloaded on my PlayStation 5 because I don't have space for it. But I really am desperate to get it back, because it's one of those games where you can play it in a short burst, just have so much fun to it. And even if you have 100% of it, just getting on those tracks and pulling off some combos and trying new things is awesome.
The multiplayer as well, like just being that, I was that kid that lived on Tony Hawk's, where it is the muscle memory, it's just in me. And so like going online and finally going up against people like around the world and being like, oh, we're all doing like times 50 combos and we're all like, it's extending the time limit because we can't like finish our multiplayer. I was like, multiplayer, Markiplier, it's all the same thing. Number 8, though, and this is where Ben Royal can come screaming back in, Resident Evil 3.
Ah, here we go, stars. Okay, well, it's not the game of the year by far, and
it was your game of the year for like most of the year.
Because there wasn't really much till The Last of Us Part 2, was there? So, yes. as I continue, number 4 on my list, it's a nice short time and I feel like it's a game that's designed to be replayed. So everyone out there who says it's like 3 hours, you know,
that's me. That's me. It's 3 hours.
Play it on a more challenging difficulty, I would say. It was ultimately like partly disappointing because they cut out the clock tower for most hardcore Resident Evil fans, and then just people that wanted a bit of a longer experience. So, like, why would you cut out the most iconic, like, I think I wrote a piece on the satellite, the most iconic piece, like location in that game, gone. And then afterwards, the gravedigger, my giant stupid worm that follows you through that. The only other boss in that game, in the original PS1 game, gone. But all in all, I still enjoyed the rush of it. And it was just, I was scared of Nemesis again for a bit. And it was, you know, I went through an S-ranked every difficulty, anything like that, and did everything because I'm obsessed. But I can see what people's complaints about it, and I will let you two bash it now.
Josh, what do you think?
Well, spoilers, but I'm currently in the midst of writing the most disappointing games of 2020, and that's absolutely going to be up there just for me personally. Yeah. I think my expectations were too high. I was looking forward to it. I bought it like day one for a price that I think is frankly ridiculous, like £50 for that game. IMO is way too much. And like Benroy was kind of touching on there with the elements that were taking away, it just felt to me incredibly lackluster and phoned in a lot of places. I enjoyed a lot of it. I enjoy the way Jill is in it. I like her new characterization.
She's the best thing in it.
Presented. Yeah. I do like some of the cutscenes with Nemesis, but Nemesis as a whole, just after Mr. X, I thought Mr. X would be teeing up like a version of Nemesis that we'd never seen before. Mm. And in a lot of ways, I thought Nemesis ended up being a step back from what we just got last year. And it felt like there was something in there but that it was kind of like stripped of its wider ambition. And it sucks for me to say, because this was up there, like my top five most anticipated games of the year. And it just didn't hit for me. And realizing it over the course of those 3 or 4 hours was so disappointing, man. I can't even put into words how just gutted I was by the end of it.
I think for me, like, what is there is, for the most part, in terms of like the feel of the shooting and the like, the level designs are enjoyable enough. And I got through it, and I couldn't believe it was so short. I just wanted so much more to it. And like you said, the Mr. X Nemesis thing, it feels like Mr. X sort of stole Nemesis's thunder, and they didn't have enough to then put onto Nemesis. And we can get into this.
If I could just say one more thing, that came out so fast, and I think they pretty much confirmed it was meant to be a DLC at some point, which is understandable. It feels like it, yeah. But we've got 8 coming out next year, and then the rumored Resident Evil, well, it was leaked, Resident Evil 4 the year after, at the end of the year. So at least for Resident Evil 4 remake, it's not going to be just another quickly squirt out one. And I think we always fantasizing, I think with Josh, I did when I was squealing as I was watching the reveal trailer, like, you could go, what if you could go around Raccoon City and stuff?
Yeah. But
the reason why Mr. X works so well is because you're in the small RPD. And then in Raccoon City, you're always on the move, so they can't keep making more city. It would have the costs. Yeah, so
it's
business.
Yeah, it's a funny one, because obviously, like, me and Scott kind of err on the disappointing side of it. But at the same time, like, I think it is quite a divisive game, because so many other people love it. Obviously, it's made our number 9 of the entire year, you know what I mean?
It's number 4 for one of our editors, Dan Durkin. It was his number 4. Sorry, it was his number 1. It was Ben Roy's number 4, which like was more than enough to get it into the top 8. I mean, these still are the games of the year. They're still sort of 10 titles that we would recommend. It's just that I think alongside considering the high bar that Resident Evil 2 set,
yeah.
3 is obviously underneath that, but it's still a great action horror game. Number 7 is Demon's Souls. Demon's Souls coming screaming in at number 7. This wasn't even on my top 10. You guys think it's something other than a big old pile, so one of you should say something, because otherwise I'll just dig into it again.
I'm going to let Benroy go first, because I just accidentally shat all over Resident Evil, so...
It's so good to see Bluepoint restore the Souls, like the Soulsborne games, like after the travesty, the trash fire we had last year of Sekiro.
Oh god!
Where it just ruined everything. And that crap game, and I hate it. I beat it, and it's fine. I guess.
Can I mute him? I don't think I can actually mute him.
Demon's Souls is just like it's just such a nice return to something that isn't just cheap and just annoying, and I prefer. Like,
almost broke me. That go on.
Yeah, it's just Demon's Souls is Spirit of Sekiro, and it's also enjoyable when you can sometimes get a mate in, and you know the flame lurker who can get in the bin. That's double teaming and just hold R2 and walk away. Hold R2 and walk away, because that's all that game really is. If you can boil it down, you could be a magic class, but I'm not. I got no time for reading, so I'm just gonna press R2 and just get through it.
I think I hate Demon's Souls. I've tried. I think it's awkward, tedious, off-putting, obfuscating.
It's so beautiful, man. It's so great.
It looks gorgeous, but that's the only thing that it does right. I hate that game's level design. I hate its progression. Mechanics it doesn't explain. It's awful.
Before Josh, because I know Josh needs to speak in this podcast. Playing that game and like just realizing this, you could just take this Demon Souls man out and make this a Lord of the Rings game. Like, so many of the levels look like sections of Lord of the Rings. But I'm just thinking, like, what if we just had a nice linear sort of like, or even the Souls like Lord of the Rings game, going through Moria, going to Mordor.
Tell you what, if you did a Souls based Lord of the Rings game,
going through off Skiliath and just like trying to like get through and then getting done over by a Wraith, all these sort of things that I'm just was fantasizing as I was playing it. That was enough to propel me to keep playing it and then enjoy. And then just hit every enemy boss on the bum.
I was glad it was done, and I deleted it. Josh, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I'd really take that Lord of the Rings game any day of the week. But yeah, I love Demon's Souls. I think I had it at number 4 on my personal top 10. I've obviously a big Souls fan, love Sekiro, love Dark Souls, love Bloodborne especially. And this was always the game that I never played. I never had a PlayStation 3 until very late. I wasn't into Souls until long after I sent my PlayStation 3 to its Viking funeral. So I've been waiting a long time to get around to this game. And it sort of lived up to the hype in a lot of ways. Like, for me, the level design, it is, for me, simpler than like Dark Souls. Dark Souls feels like a much more kind of ambitious game, but I didn't mind the tightness at all of this one in particular. And more so than the others, I got my head around it to the point where I actually thought it was too easy at times, which I always feel like I come on this podcast and try to flex by saying games are too easy. I did die a lot, but
I agree
the bosses...
Here.
I found were a bit too gimmicky and a bit too easy, apart from the Maneater and the Flame Lurker, that I was a bit sad that the challenge aspect I didn't quite get. But I think that's just because I played Dark Souls to death at this point, so I kind of know what to expect. Mm-hmm. And but that didn't really matter too much. That's my only slight negative. Otherwise, it's beautifully presented. The animations and feel of the combat to me is incredibly tight and incredibly visceral and incredibly satisfying. And I just enjoyed like being in that world, leveling up my character, exploring, finding all of these different NPCs, doing their kind of weird side missions. And it has such a great atmosphere. And as a PlayStation 5 game, like, it just knocked me away, knocked me out of the park.
Can I just ask a question? Have either of you played with anyone you've known in this game?
No,
because no.
It was a great, it's been a great game for me to play with my friend. And just like, sort of like, I would say this could be an entry point for anyone who actually gets a PS5 and is, doesn't really like these games so much, but get someone in there and you can just sort of like everything that has a scary, because, you know, there's always anticipation, oh, I don't want to go forward, I don't want to get wrecked. But if you've got someone else in there, pressing R2 as well, it's such a nice thing to experience. And then on your, I think on your own, it's cheap. I will agree with Josh, like a lot of the end bosses are just get behind them and hit them in the bum, or stand back and shoot this one woman in the face. And like, sort of think
on the boss side, like, I think I was overthinking it way too much. Like, because I came into the Souls series on Dark Souls. It's still my favorite one. And I love the Souls series and Bloodborne, especially Sekiro, even though I think Sekiro is like pushing the absolute zenith of how much your patience can be tested. But in a skill-based way, where it's like in Demons, it's just like, oh, there's a hole in the floor you fell through. Or like, oh, there's a random flying stingray thing on the that's going to shoot you from, they're going to snipe you from off screen. And I hated all that stuff, where it was just kind of like the developers been like, oh, we got you. And like, hey, we got you again. Hey, restart. And like the challenge kind of came from the tedium. It's like, I remember you saying, Bimrod, when you were playing through it, that like it was annoying, like just having to get back to a boss again, that like that is the challenge as opposed to the boss itself. And so like, I think I was overthinking the bosses because I was like, oh, well, you know, in the Dark Souls games, like some of them have different tactics and there's more animations and whatever. But like Flame Lurker, you die to his chip damage because he flames you because he's next
to
you.
That's a Bloodborne boss. That feels like a Bloodborne boss in the Demon Souls game. And that's the only one that has caused me significant trouble. Right. Most of the others I could do in the first or second try, but that one can get in the bin.
So it's weird how like each of it, because for me, the Fool's Idol, I was really overthinking that. I was like, I need to get super up close to it and I need to like try and take it on, but I kept getting caught in the ground pattern thing. And I was like, oh, if I just hang back and just use ranged magic and on bow and arrow, I did it immediately. And it's like, oh, if I'm just cheap with this, that it's way easier. And then I kind of figured it out. There's a boss later on that you can just arrow to death as well in the distance. Like, it's just tactics like that, I guess, you can kind of fall back on. Number six is Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time. I couldn't believe, Josh, this was your honorable mention. I thought it would be a hell of a lot higher.
It's been a good year, man. What can I say? Like, I love Crash, and I think that's a testament to just how solid 2020 has been in terms of games, because I love that thing. To me, it's absolutely incredible. And yeah, it didn't make my top list. It was only an honorable mention, but I'm absolutely buzzing to see it here, because I think that game is like the perfect sequel to Crash. And not only does it work on the fan service level, it's got all of these callbacks, it's got all of these kind of like visual references, but it works as a great platformer. Like, it took me back to being a kid and wanting to get that 106% and wanting to do all of the gems, find all of the hidden areas. It's just so tight and so lovingly made. I love that game, man. Love it.
I love the presentation as well, like that sort of, like, you know, it's always Pixar style cutscenes, but I think they went above and beyond in regards to how they animate, like, you know, Cortex almost steals the show. Like, I love everything that they do with Dingo and like a Dingo Dial and all that stuff's great. And it's just like, it just plays so well that I ended up like, I thought it was a little bit like kind of gotcha tedious the first time through, but I think it's because I was playing it like too fast. I was kind of running with this a sort of pace that I kind of applied from Crash 3, whereas this is way more like Crash 1 or Crash 2. And as soon as you sort of lockstep with how it wants you to progress, then you start memorizing stuff and then you start unlocking the skins and the costume stuff, and just having a blast, like just drinking every part of that game. Benroy, you had it on your top 10 as well. I think it was your number 6.
Yeah, it's where it is on our list. I played it for an afternoon and I regrettably went and played Squadrons and finished that, like, bad game. Like, not bad game, but just like nothing game.
Just forget, yeah.
But this, like, going back to this weekend, just playing it for like, for what's felt like the whole day. I think I've got like 3 worlds left. So I've just met a character who was like, ha, what are you doing here? And okay. I love that, like, Uka Uka, who was such like a formidable thing in the first, like in number three, and like there's a bit of a twist here and stuff like that. And just all these things, like Entropy, I love him, he's a great baddie, mm-hmm. and I've been flying the Dingo Dal flag forever. And my boy Dingo Dal, oh, it's just so nice.
When you first told me that like Dingo Dal is one of your favorite Crash characters, I kind of couldn't, because to me he's such a side character. And then when they made him playable in this, I was like, man, there must be tons of people waiting for this. And I'd like playing the Dingo levels, knowing you'd be like bouncing off the walls with excitement, like
And then I can't remember her, the female Bandicoot from number one, Donna. She's great playing as her as well. And like, as I feel like I'm getting to a band coming back together, five stories now, I'm just like, man, this is so good. And I've not had a single point that I haven't disliked. And I could just watch this and be fine. But also playing it, whenever I die, I feel like I'm the one screwing up. And I will defeat it. And I'm glad there's not proper lives, because I would not play it on retro like Josh did, because I'm not a sadist.
Josh, when you went on the old school mode, I bet they do give you enough. Like, I think you're on like 99 lives anyway.
Yeah, see that again. I do the weird Josh podcast flex
it, mate.
I thought retro mode was slightly too easy. It wasn't too easy. It just wasn't well thought out. Like, it was cool having the lives, but also they gave you way too many, and I spent all the game with 99 lives. And it's not like I wasn't dying. I was dying still quite a lot, especially towards the end. But I was just overwhelmed with things, and I was like, I'm having the exact same experience as Scott and Benroy here, and yet this mode's kind of doing nothing. That's maybe the minor drawback, if I didn't have to criticize it.
We haven't mentioned the new masks. They all kind of work as well, and they all sort of like, apart from there's one that's upside down one is playing with my brain a bit, like I'm like, but apart from that, all the new masks have worked, and they've changed it up enough to where I'm like, this is just good.
I had like just a great time going through it. Like I said, once I kind of figured out the pace that they wanted and it all sort of locked in, I was like, oh, it's because Crash 3 is my favorite one, but that's by far the easiest one and the most one that's stuffed full of minigames. But once I kind of realized that it was more like Crash 1 and 2, like just hoovering up all the gems or as many as I could and getting all the costumes, minus the one that's in Cortex Castle, because you need all the gems for that, which means dying less than three times on that stupid final gauntlet where you've got to juggle all four masks and everything. That's a hell of a thing. And would also recommend in regards to Crash 4, Kadika Chris's video on trying to 106% it or whatever, because that means finding gems that are just behind rocks and behind parts of the scenery, and how insanely infuriating that can be.
I would never do this because I couldn't do it, because like, I tried to do it with Crash 1 and I was hurting my hands. But yeah, like no way I'm going to go for the platinum or do the gems. I'm not doing that.
That's an endurance test. Number five is Ori and the Will of the Wisps. This was my number one, and I would love Mr. Josh Brown to play it, but he's never going to. Me and Benroy have done it. We touched it. We played it. It's a lovely time.
Finished it.
Yeah.
I would say, as someone who isn't sort of like as into Ori, like it was a nice update to what I, because I played them both this year. It was nice to have some sort of combat, not just firing energy balls like relentlessly and almost like sort of like randomly.
Did you get that giant hammer thing when you get to, if you equip that and just when you level a guy with that massive hammer?
I don't think, because I like to stick to the sword for the most part, and I eventually ditched off the bow and arrow because I wanted other things like triple jump, and there were so many abilities that I want to be able to keep in the air as much as possible, and I want enough things to stop me from falling, like grabbing onto an enemy and stuff. I just want to be able to just keep moving and not be on the floor. And it was, for me, it's those games that they look beautiful, they play amazingly, but like there's just a point where I'm biased, unless it's like in Mario, that a lot of them don't really sort of like get into my heart and become like I become them. And I played it as, it was just, I thought it was really good, but for me it just doesn't break my top 10 this year.
Okay, I think at some point it's just going to be like obviously like personal preference, genre-based stuff.
It
is in the platformer mold, whereas like to me, it's absolutely immaculate. Like the stuff that you just said about, you know, the presentation, the way that it plays, like that thing is so fluid. Like you can change so many different moves together, you unlock so many different moves. And just like going through that game, like once you start unlocking more different powers or different parts of the environment that open up, and then doing all the side missions, and thematically, like just being this sort of like forest spirit that's helping everybody out and rebuilding the village and, you know, defeating sort of like weird demonic forces that have infested that big bear or that big evil frog or whatever you want to do.
And that was disgusting with that. the things coming
the
out of this frog
thing as well.
Josh, when you eventually see this frog and the things coming out of this frog, nightmare fuel.
It's a hell of a thing.
More reasons to not play it there, man. That's all. No, for
the love of God, I don't know how to get. I might do some sort of Patreon. Get Josh Brown to play Ori and the Will of the Wisps.
Can I just say this is a perfect compliment to, like, you play this for a good few hours, then you stop, and then you watch James May O Cook on Amazon Prime. Not sponsored by it, but it's a really good show, and it was a nice like 1-2 with that.
The one person I know recommending James May's cooking show, always good.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Next one down is number 4, Final Fantasy VII Remake, which I had way down at like number 8 or 9 on mine. It was your second game of the year, Ben Roy. You should probably highlight why.
As someone who stuck their nose up ignorantly to Final Fantasy for so many years, and like, I can't believe this has finally knocked the spirits of In off as the best Final Fantasy, in my opinion. And playing through this game, and I needed a modern campaign. I needed to just grow as a human and just stop being like, I'm going to take my PS1 mag and smack you around the head of it before I play this game because I don't want to play it. I'm not a nerd, but then I just love all this other nerd stuff. But no, I digress. Like, it's from the mechanics of fighting, I like the freedom of moving around. The characters all drew me in. You play this and you think it's just be another anime fest, and then you like, oh, there's an environmental message to this as well. And then there's a random cat that they'll never explain.
But it'll be in like part 4.
Yeah, and we'll all be retiring by then. Yeah. And just everything in this game, man, like from how great it looked, apart from like some, you know, the old tap or the bin in the corner, and to every character they've refleshed out. Like, I think, it's not Jessie, is it? Like, I said she was pretty
good. Jessie's the character that won't stop leaving you alone at the start.
And you were like, oh, she's no one in the first game. And I'm like, oh. Crap. And just going through that, and like, I love the look of this world, and like this, so I would just love to play more stuff and experience
you know what you should
I can't remember the name of the city now.
Oh, it's Midgard's the name of the main city.
I would just love to be in Midgard forever, to be fair. Yeah. Like,
but you know what you should do then? You should play Final Fantasy VII then.
And Midgard's only like 5 minutes in that game, so why would I play it for Midgard?
Because then, oh my God, the reason that I couldn't, I put Final Fantasy VII Remake on mine because I was still like, yep, there are some massive highs in this. I love what they did with all the different boss fights. I love how much it's fleshed out. And that's one of the only games I would ever recommend playing on hard mode because I think it completely changes it. Not necessarily to you, but anyone who can hear my voice. And the hard mode on 7 Remake completely changes it in a way that brings it way more in line with the original, where you really have to have specific character builds and you really have to start thinking about how you're using your magic and when you're busting out a special and saving different points for different parts of the fight and stuff like that. But I could not get away from the amount of changes they made to the source material that were infinitely worse. And so I was always pairing that off with how the story should be told and how they bring in stuff that shouldn't be revealed for like another, like in the third act that they're bringing in now. And like, it's insane.
You're in Midgard the whole game, right? But every chapter almost feels totally different after you get through those first few. And I'm just like, it's just a nice change of pace for each one of them. Like there was some points like the ghost train yard I even enjoyed and like that was nothing in the first game. Just all these little bits, man. Like I can't wait to see what they do with the next few and I can't wait to become a Final Fantasy man even more. And apart from like, what's that stupid poison boss in the sewer when you first come into it? That was the point when I hated the game and I wanted to just get rid of it.
The big horn thing that you've got to
it sludges you. And
there
are sometimes in the game when you're stuck in a health loop. Maybe I'm crap, but you get stuck in a health loop where you're trying to heal, but you keep getting hit. And like it's almost like you're barely doing anything, but apart from that, and a Hell House can go and die in a bin.
The Hell House is one of the best pieces of fan service in gaming history. That thing is insane.
Josh, what do you think, though?
Yeah, Josh, quick thoughts before we move on.
Well, like Ben Roy, I think it's really interesting that me and Roy both had it higher than you, Scott, because we, prior to this game, we're not Final Fantasy men at all. Because you guys don't have the original. You know what I mean? But I couldn't believe how much I love this game. I would never have played it had the world not gone into lockdown because I wouldn't have found time with it. But because that happened, I was like, oh, I'll finally give Final Fantasy VII a go. Scott won't shut up about it. Obviously went against your wishes and played the wrong version.
Yep.
But I digress. I still thought it was an amazing experience for everything that Roy has just said there. Like the presentation of the game, the fact that I found myself falling in love with these characters like Jesse, who I knew the big hitters. I knew about Aerith, I knew about Cloud, I knew all of that stuff. I didn't know about these other supporting characters that just added so much to this world, and just living there felt so unique and it's so beautifully brought to life. And I thought the combat, it was really engaging once I got to grips with it. I do also agree that there are quite a few annoying moments in it, and there are quite a few annoying sections in general. Like this is the game that perhaps pissed me off the most and I have a lot of grievances with it, but they almost don't matter because when it was hitting those high points, they were so unbelievably high. And it's the game that I've enjoyed talking about the most this year. I remember when we were talking about it, I think a few weeks ago after Roy had finished it. And I remember when me and you, Scott, did a podcast right when it came out with Benji, and like having these different perspectives on it from people who have played it when they were children and adore it compared to people who are coming in now, and the differences that they actually implement in the game itself and the risks that they genuinely do take. Like, it's such fertile ground for good conversation, and there's so much there to pick apart that I genuinely do love it with its faults and with its strengths.
Yeah, the thing I'm saying about the changes, like it's mainly the way that they treat Sephiroth, like the way that it actually ends up wrapping up that crazy cosmological space Lovecraftian horror thing that they go for at the end, and that is completely new to this game. Like that whole thing is the most fascinating thing in all of the Final Fantasy VII discourse, because it's like that game, the original game, has branched off into like anime and different spin-offs and movies and stuff. And it's like with the card that they play at the end of the remake is like either going to be absolute genius and it's going to pay off in the next installment, or they blew their load way too fast and they've given away what is supposed to be the end of the overall story. And I don't know how the hell they then do that. So I'm kind of just, it puts me in a weird state where I'm glad that they've done this stuff and they've taken a risk and it's revitalized the conversation around 7 for people like me, because now we don't know what's going to happen. But there are still bits like what they do with Sephiroth, the way he's introduced, things like that, that I think could be done better. We're into the top three, and number three is Ghost of Tsushima, which I wish was at number one.
I thought this was good.
This is even going to be great or horrible.
I thought, right, in my head, I thought three was going to be Doom Eternal and one was going to be Ghost of Tsushima. This has blown everything out of the water.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a strong top three, I think.
It is. It's a beautiful top three. I think Ghost of Tsushima as well is easily one of the... I mean, that literally just won the People's Choice Award for at the Video Game Awards as by popular opinion or whatever. So the public have voted for Ghost of Tsushima. I think this game is immaculate. It was always between that and a certain other two games that are in our top three. As to my number one, whatever they may be. And I just think that, I mean, I went back to it last night because on PS5, it's like 4K 60. And I was like, I'm just going to go back and mop up the rest of the encampments that I didn't clear out and maybe other side missions that I haven't done. And just there's something about that game. It's like spiritually imbued with this sort of peaceful, tranquil, like, you know, like I said, sort of spiritual feel, but then it can just turn like on a dime and become this like bloody, I'll do what's necessary to protect what's mine type thing thematically. And I love both sides of that coin. I don't think I've ever seen them done so well, like the serenity of the environment and exploration and playing the flute while you're walking down the riverside.
Yeah,
And then just sort of busting out the moon stance or the stone stance and just stabbing a dude's neck off. It's a lovely time, to be honest.
Love that stuff. It was, funnily enough, number three on my own personal list. This has lined up quite well there because, I love it for all the same reasons. Like, I didn't even expect to enjoy it as much as I did. Like, going into it, I thought I'd only play it for maybe like 10 or 15 hours and then maybe get bored of it because there is a lot of repetition in there. But after that, I couldn't put it down because, like you said, it has this perfect mix of like violent urgency alongside this real tranquility when you are just kind of like walking around, you're collecting flowers, you're doing these haikus and stuff like that. And it all meshes together in a way that it has no right to. Like, it's got such a great sense of direction that so many other open world games lack, that even if it is potentially a little bit bloated, all of the systems inform like central themes and central motifs, and it all comes together in a way that nothing feels wasted or nothing feels kind of superfluous.
Mm-hmm. I've got to do one shout out as well. It doesn't matter what order you do that game in, which I found so refreshing. Like, so many games, it's like, oh, make sure you do all the side stuff or do everything before you hit the final thing. Like, you'll get that big warning in so many games where it's like, beyond here, you can't go back. Make sure you do all the stuff. And I'm like, well, I want to see the story through, so I don't want to delay that because it breaks all the pacing. I think they do flag saying like, this is the last mission, but it doesn't matter. You can do that last mission and then go do everything else, and all the dialogue will reflect what's happened in the main story, which I just... Why is that not in everything? Like, that's a quality of life improvement for how you do an open world story, which I just thought was brilliant. Ben Roy, some quick thoughts on Mr. Tsushima.
I hope that the second one gets me a lot better. I think I've said a lot about this game. And I think there are some aspects, like some mechanics that are just missing, and something I feel like relies too much on just go into a different stance, like press the same button. It doesn't really feel like it warrants like all the stance.
They could do more for stance stuff.
They all feel too the same to me, and I would personally like the option to turn on a mini map and thing like that. And I feel like a lot of the side stuff was extremely repetitive and just went on a bit. But thematically, the story I enjoyed, and the moments when it would pull me in, I was very much really in. But for like, there were just too many bits that irked me on the way, and too many bumps in the road that kind of like put it down. It's my number seven, but like, I still like, I thoroughly like, I didn't hate myself playing this. Like, I hated myself playing Sekiro or another game, but I enjoyed this to the end, and this was like a nice chill play, if that makes sense.
I love what they've done to it as well. Like, they've added obviously the Legends mode, the whole multiplayer thing, but it does have another single player thing if you want to get stuck into that side of it. Plus, they've added New Game Plus, so if you want to just start it over, which I do, or I have done, and I have everything carried over, that game's lovely. So number two then, which will immediately give away what number one is, number two is The Last of Us Part Two.
Oh,
I know.
Hell.
The thing is, doing some of these weighted rankings just by sheer fact of, you know, a certain game maybe not being anyone's number one, but being high in a multitude of people's overall ranking will eventually get it to number one because it does add up to a number one spot. So I'll get to number one in a second, but you can probably guess what it is. Number two, though, The Last of Us Part Two. I had this really low on mine because I just, over time, I've just kind of soured on it. I have a million thoughts on The Last of Us 2. I'm glad that it exists, but I'm not ever going to go back to it. I didn't really enjoy it. I sort of like was glad that it was done. I'm not the person to sort of speak about it as one of the games of the year, although I do think it is one of the games of the year and it is one of the most essential things you should play. It's just got such a black heart to it. And I think that, I don't know, I go back and forward on it. What do you guys think of The Last of Us 2?
for me, I'm like the exact opposite of that, Scott, in a way, because it's the only game that I've ever played that I've immediately gone back through, like back to back, and played it twice straight away. Normally when I play a game and I finish it, like Ghost of Tsushima, I love that thing, platinumed it, played it for like 60 hours or whatever, but haven't touched it since, won't go back to it on PlayStation 5 because I'm done. Last of Us Part 2, I loved the first time around, and I did my review on it, so I don't want to repeat myself too much here, because my thoughts haven't really changed, which is kind of weird as well. But then I immediately wanted to get back into it yet again. And I just, for me, like it, and I know it's very divisive, but for me, like we've said a million times, like I think it nails what it set out to do. It surprised me in ways that I thought were earned and satisfactory. And I don't necessarily agree that it does have a black heart. I know me and you have clashed heads on this
Even I don't like fully mean what I think that sounds like. I do think that Last of Us 2 has one of the best. I've said it in the explanation video. I think it's this clarion call for peace and harmony and actually understanding each other and moving forward together. All that stuff is there. I think I just mean that I can't get around the wasted potential of it in a way. And I kind of don't. I fundamentally, personally, subjectively don't like what they actually did with 2. And I think the more distance I've had since 2, the more I've thought back on the original Last of Us, and the more I treasure that game so much, and I can go back to it, and it has like a warm feeling to it when I want to go play it, and I want to live in that world and hang out with those characters and that dynamic. And I don't have any of that in 2. 2 feels very cold and sterile, and it's to make that point, to make you long for a human connection, that it gets there at the very end, but I think it's missing throughout it intentionally. But it means that I've tried loading that game up, and I just go, I don't want to be here. I don't want to play this. Yeah. This feels horrible. Might be a 2020 thing, but yeah.
I think it's like brave of that game, behind that game to do that, because we get that so much in film, where sometimes you just watch a film or maybe episodes of a TV show, when at the end it's not a happy ending. And like, this game was about hate, it wasn't about love. And I'm glad that it didn't turn into some sort of Disney ending at the end. Like that game, I'm ignoring the whole internet sphere around it, because you should ignore the internet anyway. You should go to whatculture.com and whatculturegaming on YouTube. And apart from that, screw the rest of the internet.
It's not a sphere, it's a tunnel.
Delete Twitter. But just everything from how great that game looked and how much they've been played on the gameplay, and seeing those characters again and them actually feel like they've grown, and we could have had everyone just be happy, friendly, and then go out for another adventure. That we're gonna get a MacGuffin, but it kind of is getting a MacGuffin. But there's a reason to this. That I think there's a really strong reason for this MacGuffin as a whole to be there. And I feel like the only thing I ever jive with is that the hard split that they've done, playing it again for my third time now with someone else. We're just like, it's such a hard point when I finished that bit, and I gauged from passing next to me, and she just couldn't understand why. Now I was like, by the way, you have to play this. It's gonna be another 100 years before we get to the end. And she's like, what? And it's amazing how they have two really strong lead characters. They're so divisive, and you can side with them either way at either point and either scene. You can flip flop the whole time, because I feel like it's done so well in that way. But I feel like the pace of it and the hard split and the leaks and the just idiots everywhere has just sort of like taken this game and pulled it down to a pit, and being locked in and like, what else is going on? But the fact that it's gone for hate, it hasn't gone, at the end, we're just going to mop it up and it's going to be nice. You get to the end and you get to more of a bit, and you're so drained. You look like, you feel as like you're covered in blood like Ellie is. You feel like you want to cry, and you get disappointed. And then when you have to do certain things that I can't do, like, if they can make me do this, I'm just going to turn it. I'm not going to do it. Yeah. And going for that, being traumatized that much by a game after it, I felt like that game ripped so much out of me at certain points, just to keep going and also to enjoy it fundamentally as a really good game.
I think like the thing with like this particular ranking, this particular podcast, is that we all submitted our own personal top tens, which is different to me reviewing a game or like trying to analyze a story with a more sort of measured approach. You're not saying what I would do, what I think is different, as opposed to appreciating a piece of work, like, you know, a piece of art or a text or whatever, and being able to analyze it that way. So like, I have a million thoughts on Last of Us 2. It's just that if we're getting completely subjective in it, I can never shake the fact that when I hit the credits, I personally just went, I don't know if I needed that. And I've never really shaken that. I've never really got away from that. And I think that's my completely personal thoughts, is I kind of, part of me kind of wishes they did something different with the sequel to The Last of Us.
I've been waiting for this for so long, when it'd be announced, and just the trauma of like trying to not get a sport for out. And like, and then like, when I hit credits, like, I just like,
I mean, that's the thing. Like that whole ending.
Yeah, and like The Last of Us Part One is still my favorite game of all time. I think it is the best game like ever made. It's my favorite game ever. This is probably a better game, but this didn't top that for me in my personal ranking or isn't like what we should look back upon sort of thing. Like I get
another thing as well, because we move on to number one, but another thing on The Last of Us Two, if we're just talking like for me, I another sort of thing that I think the original maybe does better is like the end of the original left you with such a massive conversation on like the needs of the many, outweigh the needs of the few. And that whole thing, what would you do if you were Joel? Is Joel really the villain? All that kind of stuff. There were so many fascinating conversations and philosophies that came out of that, sort of dissecting his motivations and dissecting what would you do, the parental role and stuff like that. Whereas I feel like Last of Us 2 is way more cut and dry. And sort of when 2 ends, it's very forlorn, but it's very, you know what should have happened. You know what, you feel sad because they couldn't have reconciled. They couldn't make things work. Ellie was too addicted to the revenge. And I just, that sort of clear cut nature, it just, personally, it didn't resonate as much. It didn't give me as much to talk about. It was almost like
there was never any smile,
and it was done. Yeah,
there was never any happy time in this. Like it was always,
which I don't need. But it's more like sort of like I said, like a warm, I don't know, some sort of more positive thematic thing to sort of latch onto and dissect and pick apart in the apocalypse. But whatever. Actually, Josh, did you have any final thoughts? Because me and Benroy talked a lot there.
No, it's good. I would disagree, but to disagree and go into why I think slightly different is to derail the entire video, and we've done plenty of these before, so I would just defer to the other videos that we've done for why I think it's slightly different. But I mean, I'm not gonna like at number two, that's fine. That's is a cool ranking as far as I'm good. Like this has been a great year, like I said, so any of these top three could have taken it, I think.
So the one that is at number one is Doom Eternal, which is the game that, I mean, for me, when I played Doom Eternal, I reviewed it, I loved it, 5 stars, and I said that I think this is going to be the game of the year. And it was mine until Ori and the Will of the Wisps knocked it off the top. But Doom Eternal was none of our actual number ones, which is kind of hilarious. Nobody, even none of the presenters, none of the editors, put it at number one, but it did add up to being eventually number one just because of the amount of different placements that it had. I do think it's a phenomenal game, though. I mean, going back to the DLC, you can't get a better first-person shooter or a better pure action game. Like, that thing moves as fast as your brain can process thoughts.
I think you
like,
can. It's insane. 2016.
It's not at all, though, is it? Because if you go back to 2016's Doom, that game is 2 brilliant halves and the final third drags the hell on. We all loved it back in the day, but if you go back to it now, that game is not paced very well.
I do sort of agree with Scott Hilford here, because I think the divide comes in between whether you like Doom 2016 or whether you like Doom Eternal more. And for me, it's Doom Eternal, because even though it's just building upon what was great about Doom, it just has a more bombastic rhythm to it. And getting into that rhythm, by the time you're just taking out these rooms and rooms of enemies towards the end, which have these ridiculous bad guys in them that are so dangerous, and yet you've kind of mastered the dance that you need to do, apart from when a marauder comes in and that just completely shakes everything up. But for everything else, you get to master that dance. You get to use these weapons. The way this game, more so than 2016, encourages you to swap weapons as well, I think is really great and interesting, and you use more of that arsenal. And yeah, the platforming might not be as good as it can be, but I never detracted even one iota for me. Like I still enjoyed it enough, and I think it is necessary to break up the pacing a little bit, because if you just have 100% action 100% of the time, like it becomes a little bit grating, so it wouldn't work with the rhythm, in my opinion, without those sections or without that kind of moment of quiet before you gear up to the next arena.
One thing that's fascinating is like, because they went in such an arcadey direction, like they bring in the platforming, they have the Mario style like lines of flame balls rotating around that you have to jump over and stuff, and like when I saw that, I loved that, because I was like, oh cool, like it's so video gamey anyway, there's power-ups everywhere, it's very self-aware, and I was like, oh that's cool, they're doing that, oh that's from Super Mario, that's kind of fun. But I know that like that sort of bounce, like a lot of people bounce off that, like Ben Ryan, I know you weren't a fan of the platforming, I know a lot of people didn't like how much that was kind of arcadey and kind of over the top.
Yeah, for me the jump in, I just, all the platforming sections, just I feel like they take everything they tried, I feel like they tried to add here, like takes the air out of the room for me. Like the marauders, oh funny, it's hard, but it just takes the air out of the room, and like I feel like it works as a boss, but I don't feel it works when you throw them into the middle of a combat section. Because everything is, yeah, sure, like, it's a hard boss, we like hard games now, Demon's Souls, Dark Souls, Sekiro, but, like, it's just, you're trying to deal with it, it's got a shield, it's got a dog, and all these things, every time it was there, it wasn't, oh, I can't wait, it was a, okay, let's go, like, I got through them all, like, they never enjoyed it for me, and as it went on, and just, some of the choices that I made, like turn it into Super Mario, like just what is this? Like, this isn't the pure enjoyment I was getting from 2016. And every time I got to one of these sections, I was like, well, do I just want to just go and like watch James May or something? Because Amazon Prime.
Start with the James May taking you away from Doom Eternal.
Because for me, it feels like one of my my biggest disappointment this year, this does, because I held 2016 in such high esteem. 2016 for me was only just beaten by Hitman that year. But for this man, it just falls flat. Like when we play Cyberpunk, if Cyberpunk is great, and like next week, this week, whatever, like it might kick Doom Eternal out of my top 10. Like it just, I don't feel anything really for Doom Eternal.
Oh,
it was in my list here. Like I could have tactically like not put it in my top 10, but I feel like
we've said this a million times, but the platforming is lit for me. It's literally 10 minutes of that game.
I imagine it's not though, because I could go and be one of, I'm going to go and time it, but I'm not going to. But imagine if we were in the office and when this came out, we were just, because it would have been that meme when they're shouting at each other and they're just like, what are you doing here? And I'm just like, I hate you so much. Because
oh yeah, that's the, where the Orange County Chopper people, when we're in the office, just bellowing at each other from across the room. When we did the initial roundup on the idea of doing the best games of the generation, that was a very fruitful conversation as well. But yeah, I don't know, Doom Eternal, for me, it nails everything. The platforming stuff only enhances it, gives me more variety of stuff to do. I don't think it takes up that much of the runtime, but to focus on the overall positives, the control scheme, like the stuff that Josh touched on before, about them encouraging you to switch weapons, that like they give each enemy a different weak point. I love the whole armor thing. So like, if you want to really get stuck in, like, be like, look at a fray of enemies and just be like, I can get right in the middle of that and stick the armor thing on and just be like hoovering up armor power-ups while you're doing fatality type stuff, different weapons swapping between different things. And with all the acrobatic stuff, that the air dashes and everything else, I just think that once you lock in with just how many options they give you and the frame rate keeps up and everything, I've not had another experience as visceral as that all year. It was just so, so well done.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think it's a funny one for me because I can't really fault it, right? Yeah, it wasn't my top of the year. I don't even think it was in my top five because it just...
I think
just,
if it nailed more of the story, like if it had... Yeah, I love the lore, I love the narrative, but I don't think the actual story beats really do very much.
I think that's it. I think it's just missing that kind of like something surprising that it does really well. Because everything it does, you almost expect it to do well. And obviously, there's nothing wrong with that. It's still incredible. Makes it incredibly recommendable. And if anyone likes first-person shooters, I'd push Doom Eternal on them without even a second hesitation. Because it does do what it does flawlessly. Even if you like platformers, I'll still push it on them. If I had one potential reservation about why it wasn't higher, it was just because it was missing that kind of like... something else, that's something extra, little push of magic that it doesn't necessarily need, but they do so much
great stuff with all the lore drops, the like text entries that you can find, and then realizing that you are the same Doom Slayer from the original Doom that was like trapped in hell and then went to some other planet and is the same dude. Like I think that stuff is incredible. I kind of wish they'd done more of that in cutscenes, but I guess they had to split the difference because like in the original, in Doom 2016, you can just ignore the cutscene stuff. Even when you're like in game being told stuff, you can just sort of wander around, or you know, it's Doom guys always slapping away some tablet with information on that he's supposed to be getting on with or whatever. I feel like they had to split it that way.
I just hope that the third one isn't just a full-on sort of like platformer, and I hope they don't ruin Wolfenstein 3 with what they're doing here.
It can only make it better, but we can also hand it off to people down in the comments, or you can come find us on social media. Let us know what you think your game of the year 2020 is, and what would be your top three ranking. Is it Ghost of Tsushima, Last of Us 2, and then Doom Eternal, or would you switch it around? For now, I've been Scott. This has been, rather, the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Sorry, that was really negative of me. It's not like the worst thing in the world. Like, there are worse things in the world, but I just don't think it's game of the year. And I've been Ben Roy Turner.
Yeah, it's been Ben Roy Turner. Also, Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
Doom Eternal's brilliant. Catch you all next time. Yeah. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.